Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today we have Sean Wildermuth, the president of Agilitrain, which does the Silverlight Tour. He's also the author of the upcoming book, Essential Windows Phone 7. How are you, Sean?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am doing extremely well. I am upbeat, and I am glad to have you here again. It's always interesting and exciting. Before we get started, I want to ask you about your upcoming book.
Sure.
It's called Essential Windows Phone 7. Who's the publisher?
Addison Wesley. It's in the .NET Checkerboard series.
So that's a wonderful thing. There has not been one book in that series that I haven't been impressed by and found valuable.
Oh, so you haven't read my other book. Oh, wait.
Well done. Well done. So that's great. So when will that be out?
Well, originally it was going to be out next week, but Mango sort of derailed it, so we decided not to release the non-Mango version, and we're pushing a Mango version by the unnamed conference, which the rest of us call PDC.
So we're looking for early fall.
Correct.
Excellent. And the book is going to be Windows Phone from start to finish, or what's the thrust?
The thrust really is to try to get people into Windows Phone fairly quickly. We point them at, you know, larger volumes that cover Silverlight more in depth and things like that. So we're really focusing on the phone features themselves. It's not going to be a giant reference tome. It's going to be more of a book that can be read to understand the whole process. So we're focusing really on the Windows Phone-ness of the project and the Silverlight piece specifically. It's more about app development than it is about game development.
Can't wait to see it. That sounds great. I am rereading Essential Link in the same series, and it is really an extraordinary series. It they claim on the back cover to have some of the foremost authors in the .NET world, and I think that's a claim they can back up. So it's quite great that you have a book in that series. Now two books in that series.
Well, it's nice. It's a nice company to be in when you look at, you know, Chris Sells and Don Box and everyone.
Yeah, the other unknowns from the .NET world.
Yeah.
So we were together at Mix, and I got some of your impressions there, but now that you've had a little bit of time to reflect, what's your overall take on Mix this year?
Well, it depends on who you were. If you're a HTML guy, I think Mix was interesting. I wasn't as impressed with the IE9 demonstration as I think a lot of people thought that I should have been. If you're a Silverlight developer, I think there was a lot of disappointment there. If you're a Windows Phone developer, I think there was plenty of excitement on the second day keynote and such around that. But I've heard a lot of dire things from Silverlight folks around, you know, the lack of fanfare around Silverlight. And certainly, you know, even the keynote that talked about Silverlight the second day covered maybe a third of what's in Silverlight 5. And at the time, I was kind of perplexed by this, mostly because I heard other people there ordering their coffins, as it were. You know,
there's an image. Thank you.
Yeah. Is Microsoft wanting me to learn HTML5? Is that really the story I'm taking out of this? And those sorts of dire predictions. And it's interesting because in hindsight, as I've looked at it, I think that part of the problem with the way that Mix was handled is that there wasn't anything new to talk about with Silverlight 5 except to say, oh, you can download the beta, right? Everything had been announced already. There was nothing new. Everything that was in the beta and even stuff that's not in the beta was all announced back in December.
Well, you'll remember that a lot of what happened with Silverlight 5 was announced earlier than it might have been at the Firestarter, because at the time there was a lot of concern in the Silverlight community that at PDC, Silverlight had been overlooked. And so there was this high-energy Firestarter where a lot of focus was on Silverlight 5 and what was coming. And that, to some degree, stole the thunder on Silverlight from Mix.
And I think that's true. I think there's also an idea at Mix that Mix is not for app developers. That Mix is for the, you know, cutting-edge designer, web developer sort of folks. And I think that was true in the first couple of Mix that I attended, at least. But the last two or three have certainly been, you know, PDC light. And I think it was a mistake to undercut or undersell Silverlight there, because so many of the folks there were Silverlight developers. I think Microsoft, you know, missed the boat by assuming that no one cared.
I'm not sure that I completely agree with you, but I would certainly grant that Mix and Silverlight have an intimate connection. Silverlight was unveiled by Scott Guthrie at Mix 07, and there's been a significant Silverlight focus and set of announcements at every Mix until this one. So there's no doubt that expectations were there.
Sure. And I think anyone who didn't think that there were high expectations for Silverlight there on the Microsoft side were fooling themselves, right? Because I think most of the... I don't know if most is the right word, but most of the Silverlight developers that were there were expecting more of a bang and felt like it was more of a whimper.
Okay, but now that we've had a little bit of time and we put things in perspective with the Firestarter, Silverlight, what was said about HTML5, the very big emphasis on Windows Phone and Windows Phone Silverlight at Mix, when you put all of that together, do you end up feeling optimistic about Silverlight? Or to be very, very direct, are you also one of the folks who are concerned about Microsoft's message on Silverlight, that Silverlight is somehow on life support?
So I don't think that Silverlight is on life support at all, certainly inside or outside of Microsoft. I think the point of it is that I think the messaging is still wavers more than I'd like it to. But do I think that really impacts the real story of support for Silverlight longer term? We've talked about this before. My impression of Silverlight from the very beginnings is that it's an app framework. It's not a web framework, period. But anyone who, you know, tries to pretend that it was or is, you know, anything like a Flash killer or HTML killer especially, was deluding themselves. I think the push from the folks at Microsoft for the way they sold it with, as you know, sort of the video player du jour, and even how they're still selling it with that idea, is interesting. The Netflix story, as well as the sports story, and NBC football and those sorts of things, has helped bring that ubiquity up to about 75%. But most developers aren't building video players. Most developers are building apps. They're building in-browser and out-of-the-browser applications for enterprise development, even if the enterprises are small.
Let's talk about that distinction between an application development platform and a web development platform. Talk a little bit about, first of all, what the differences are, and then let's fill in the blanks on where the web application story is.
You know, for me, when I talk about apps versus sites, it really has that sense around it. So when I'm building a site that's trying to get reach into a bunch of different users, usually consumer base of some sort, Silverlight doesn't make a lot of sense there. There are plenty of places where simply Silverlight isn't going to reach, not just because the plugin doesn't exist on iPhone. A lot of people kind of point to that as, well, of course you can't get reach. It's not on the iPhone. It's much bigger than that. We're talking about older OSs. We're talking about the vast majority of phones that are out there. You just can't have that same experience. And it's also the experience of, you know, loading a bunch of code and then running it in this long-lived experience. That an application is very different than a site. When you go to MSNBC or CNN.com, that's a website. That's giving you information. You expect it to be page-based in a lot of ways, page by page, be able to do things like copy and paste and be sensitive to what the URL is, where an application is something you're going to go to and you're going to live in this richer client for a longer amount of time, usually pretty data-centric as well. And that's really where I think Silverlight shines. That's why Silverlight, to me, is more of a Flex competitor than a Flash competitor, you know.
And how's it doing as a competitor for Flex and other application development environments?
I think it's really strong there. Unfortunately, my world view is skewed by the students that come to take my courses. Those are the people that I talk to the most about what they're using Silverlight for. And, you know, a vast majority in the last 3 years, and even a great majority when you go back to Silverlight 1 and 2, were people building apps that needed to run in the browser, cross-platform, without a large framework install. So guys that are using Silverlight have the CIO who bought a Mac, or maybe has a Mac at home, that also have fought with the IT departments around deploying .NET Framework and the .NET Framework patches, and they want an easier way to deploy those apps, you know, to all these machines without having to kind of deal with it. But they also don't want the web development story, the creating data entry apps or visualization apps with HTML is simply hard.
And how does your understanding of the Silverlight story dovetail with Windows Phone and building applications for Windows Phone using Silverlight?
Well, it's interesting. I was pretty ecstatic that the story for app development on the phone was Silverlight, but the experience is a bit different. Silverlight doesn't, on the desktop, doesn't really imply a lot of the limitations that you have on the phone as far as how you develop an app. The experience for the phone is interesting because they really are pushing this should work like a phone app should. And this means that you can take all your Silverlight skills, which is a great benefit that you've done for application development, and bring it to the phone, but there still is quite a bit to learn. You know, you have to understand the differences between mouse and touch are completely different, whereas a lot of people just try to pretend that, you know, using mouse events is good enough, and it's really not. Understanding the whole page model and the back model is different on the phone than it is on the desktop, even if you're using the navigation framework. It's a different world.
Are you finding that there are developers who are trying to straddle both worlds and do Silverlight desktop development on Monday and Tuesday and phone development on Wednesday and Thursday?
Some. You know, I think the adoption of the Windows Phone development from developers is pretty good right now, except that most of that development isn't development people are getting paid to do. So most of the Windows Phone developers I've talked to aren't doing it in their day job. They're doing it, you know, as a moonlighting sort of thing, hopefully to bring in some revenue, just because there aren't enough phones quite yet. I think we're still early in the cycle. So they're, instead of, you know, doing it on Monday and Tuesday and then doing phone on Wednesday and Thursday, they're doing Silverlight on Monday and Tuesday and doing phone development on Tuesday night and Wednesday night.
I think that's a great perspective, and I wonder if that is, as you imply, temporary as Windows Phone begins to show itself in the market. IDC, a couple others, have predicted that the phone will be number two in sales in the next couple years, and I wonder if we'll see a shift in where people are putting their time as Windows Phone sales pick up.
Well, I think you're starting to see, finally, the beginnings of some real adoption in the enterprise, or I should say in the corporate world, for Windows Phone, is kind of to have that complete story. But it's still going to lag behind Android and iPhone right now, just because the numbers don't make a lot of sense to invest a lot of money there. Of course, the big benefit of using the phone, if you've already have .NET developers, is that the speed at which you can develop is a lot faster than you can having people learn Objective-C or even Monotouch. Is just a faster development, you know, uptake than it is.
Well, that dovetails nicely with what Eric Mork and Kelly White were saying last week on yet another podcast. They came on and they were talking about their decisions as to which of the three platforms to develop. And to boil it down, and I hope I'm paraphrasing them correctly, their feeling was that they didn't want to develop for Android because the expectation is that applications were essentially free, so there was not a good return on investment there, and that they could develop three or four Windows Phone applications in the time they could develop an iPhone application. And so they felt that there was a better bet there, even if it was a smaller audience for now.
And I think that's a good story. The amount of people that have Windows Phones that are paying for apps is certainly a lot higher than Android. I don't know how it compares with iPhone. It's also interesting that I was actually reading an article about 10 minutes ago about Netflix. Netflix has finally released a version for Android, which sounds like a really good idea, except they're targeting a very small number of handsets, and it's really because of the fragmentation of the platform, the idea that certain features that they need don't exist in the same way on every phone, and so they have to test on every single phone very separately how to do especially the video stuff, and I think this is the big pain for almost all Android developers. And honestly, Android development's easier than Objective-C in the iPhone. It is. There's no question about it. And the framework they've built is pretty good. My problem with Android development right now is that every handset manufacturer can, you know, spin out their own version of the OS, which means you have to develop a version for, frankly, every handset. And that becomes a huge issue.
Now, that's slightly different from my understanding. So bring me up to speed here. I know that there are multiple versions, concurrent versions of Android, each named after a dessert, apparently. But what you're saying is that there's also proprietary versions of Android per phone manufacturer?
Well, because it's the operating system is open source, at least it was. It is in the 1.0 and 2.0 timeframes. Most, if you stick to kind of the core Android functionality, you don't need to worry about phones. But as soon as you start to pull in things that are a bit outside of it, and Netflix certainly ran into this with video, it becomes handset specific, right? If it isn't in the core set of Android services, then it's, you know, cowboy time. Every handset for like the video services implemented it a little differently. Because Android itself said, well, we don't need to worry about video. The handset manufacturer will worry about how to do video. And so, you know, the people that have done any sort of streaming have been kind of pained by this. You know, YouTube works on Android because it doesn't do streaming. But as soon as you start to get into the streaming story, every handset manufacturer handled it differently, especially as you start talking about different networks, right? Do you do streaming differently on a 3G versus a 4G
yes.
network? What do you do when it drops down to a slower connection even than 3G?
All right, let me bring you back to the central story that we felt was coming out of Mix when the two of us talked there and immediately after, which was we talked about the Silverlight story, but we haven't really talked about the Silverlight and HTML5 story. So when you hear the words HTML5, are you indifferent? Does it send a shudder through you, or are you happily anticipating?
Well, as someone who does Silverlight and more, I think that HTML5 is actually, you know, really good news for web development. But web development's the important part of that sentence, right? It's, as a web developer, I'm really happy to have a bunch of the stuff that's in HTML5, the improved CSS stack, all the new tags that are more semantic in nature, ubiquity in the way certain things work, like local storage, is all really interesting. Though it's not quite baked yet. So having to use certain libraries to go, oh, is this feature supported on this browser? And have, you know, the classic if-thens is, you know, it's nice to have features like, you know, local storage, but knowing that it doesn't work on all browsers means that I'm going to have to handle both cases anyway. So is it better than HTML4? Yeah. Is it the panacea that everyone, you know, is looking for? Is it the holy grail of web development that's going to fix everything? No. So as a web developer, I'm excited about the HTML5 support. I really am. I think that it really helps. But as a Silverlight developer, it doesn't scare me either, right? If I was doing development in Silverlight because I was worried about HTML5, the box model or the performance of graphics, I probably wasn't doing a mainstream Silverlight app anyway. So, you know, with Google I/O happening this week and the whole kind of, push around, WebGL. WebGL is the standard that Google's pushing that Firefox and Chrome both support for 3D on the web. You know, we've done this before, and WebGL, requires, knowledge of the, underlying video drivers instead of it kind of being, on the surface there. So, a lot of people are going, WebGL is interesting, but it's running slow on my system. They're going, well, you need updated drivers. It doesn't work on older machines. And then, it starts to fall apart. And in fact, it starts to feel like a plugin all over again.
What I'm hearing from a lot of developers boils down to, where do I put my time? How am I going to become proficient at Silverlight? And as you say, programming for the phone is an overlapping but different set of skills. If I then add in HTML5 and jQuery And if I'm going that route, then MVC, ASP.NET, and for all I know, Ruby. I mean, there is only so much time in a day. And so where do people put their focus? And I think that this really has an underlying concern of, I don't want to put my focus into something that's not going to be important and hot 6 to 12 months from now.
Correct. And I think those are two different, I wanted to separate those two ideas, important and hot, because I think they're two very different ideas. Hot, you know, will keep you interested and interesting on Twitter. Hot will make you maybe interested in new startups, but isn't going to necessarily pay you the top dollar or give you the most stable job. Interesting, on the other hand, is different than that, you know. When you look at, you know, web development today, where are most of the jobs? Most of the jobs today are still in people that know web forms, not HTML5, not MVC, people that need to just get work done. So I don't think, I think to answer your question, you know, where should people be focusing? I've got some really bad news. As web developers, we're going to have to learn a bunch of different platforms. We're just going to. What's interesting about that is most of the platforms are a lot simpler than they were, you know, even 5 years ago, and certainly than 15 years ago. And so having to have the kind of deep knowledge of a single technology, I don't think is realistic anymore. I think people are going to find out that to build a consumer-facing product today, you're going to need to know HTML5. You're going to need to know a backend like Ruby on Rails or ASP.NET MVC. You're going to need to know Silverlight or Flash or one of those technologies to build sort of the internal application structure. You're going to probably going to need to learn something like Objective-C or MonoTouch in order to get out there on things like handsets and tablets. So to me, it's sort of a weird renaissance where pretending that we can learn one technology and it's going to be applicable across the board, I think, is foolish.